Good morning, Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
So, Jean, coming from the White House today, how do you interpret the victory?
Well, which hour, I guess, right? And that's the point. I mean, it depends, I guess, what the definition of winning is. And this comes back to what the biggest challenge for many of us has been: those of us who supported the president out of the gate of attacking, you know, one of our top adversaries in the world, who, you know, and their reign of terror, is you need to understand what the objectives of the mission are, and that's been shifting by the day, right? Is it a missile program, degrading their missile defense program, which I think we've had significant impact on their missile program? Is it, is it their drone program? Are you trying to degrade their nuclear program? Do we want a regime change? And every day, depending upon who you hear from, including the president, it keeps changing. So it's very hard to judge what winning is. And what we see from Iran, including today, is they're not backing down, right? They're continuing to get
fire. A vote.
So Anderson Cooper on CNN asking Josh Gottmeier, not a name that you have probably ever heard before. He is a New Jersey representative and a Democrat. And if all you listened to from the interview was that, you might think that he's against the war, but it turns out he's actually in favor of it. So that's why I thought this was interesting, is one of the pro-Iran war Democrats in the House talking to CNN. And I agree with him that the, you know, rationale has shifted somewhat over time, over days. That's very normal for President Trump because he's not like a specifics and details kind of guy. But, you know, there are victory definitions or goals, and it's not clear exactly what they are. The president's now saying he's already won the war. Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't know how to take all of this. I've said many, many times, in case you're new to the show, I absolutely support the ethics of this. It is appropriate and justified and right. The only real questions are political and practical, because, you know, as far as that regime does not deserve to exist, and it deserves everybody who participates in it deserves to die. It's not even a hard call to make. If you quibble that, I'm not sure what else we can agree upon. You could definitely argue about military necessity, cost of war, prudence of this, all of that, sure. But the basic ethical justification of taking out that regime and their capacity to project power and death across their borders throughout history, it's, again, like I say, I wouldn't know where to start with you if you thought that was controversial.
Iran gets a vote in this as well, in terms of how they respond, and clearly they are willing to, I mean, it seems like they are willing to try to shut down the Strait of Hormuz, even though economically it will hurt Iran. They have other objectives.
Yeah, I mean, this is existential for them, right? This is survival of the regime, aside from killing the new Ayatollah's father and as well as his mom and his sister. You know, this is a moment for them of survival. And so you saw them today, as you pointed out, they attacked ships, commercial ships, in the Straits. They don't care the prices are going up. I think they believe that's their greatest strength against the world. Obviously, the president and some of our partners releasing oil reserves today, significant oil reserves. I'm not sure how much of an impact that's going to have on pricing, but they know people are feeling it at home.
Right. I mean, they understand that time is on their side, and frustration and irritation at the price of gas and the collateral price of other goods is on their side. Of course, I suppose you would look retrospectively at this and say that the tariff ruling is also on their side, because that's an increase in cost and potential pain for the government at the expense of the people in some sense or another. But, you know, not particularly connected to each other. But you just think about the things that people will find frustrating about our economy, because, you know, as Americans, we're not really prepared to be at war with somebody else. And you can tell by which things we grumble about. $3.50 gas, you know, I mean, really? Well, our military members are putting their lives at risk flying over Iran and dropping bombs on their rockets and their missiles and their drones. And, you know, like, it's a bit weird. But, okay, people have their, you know, Americans are what they are. So you understand that. So controlling, you know, making the price of gas go up, shutting down the Straits of Hormuz with 20% of the world's oil goes through there every day. It's not the oil that's in the pump at the local station that they jacked the price up recently. That's all nonsense. You know that. But it does affect global supply. It does affect global price, and that will trickle down. Even if it were done right, it would still trickle down to everything else within a couple of weeks. So you might say that the gas companies in America are actually helping the Iranians because they're raising the price of gas unjustifiedly early, and that makes it so that Americans are less willing to put up with this because that's something that Americans do care very much about. Anyway, back to the comments by Josh Gottmeier.
So as each day goes by and the prices go higher and people are already feeling a lot of pressure at home, people I represent in Northern Jersey, right, they're already talking about how they're suffering with high prices on everything. The tariffs have hit them very hard on top of, you know, rent and food and everything else that they're dealing with from a pricing perspective. So you add gas prices to utility bills and you've got midterms coming up. So there's a lot of political reality here the president's going to be facing. Listen, this should be more popular, I believe, than it's been so far. That means, though, the president has to actually lay out the case, make a clear argument. And when you're shifting objectives and mission by the day, and plus losing American lives, that adds up to be very challenging, even for those of us who naturally would be inclined to be more supportive.
I love the comment in the middle that this action, this war, or this whatever you want to call it, what do you call it? An excursion? This excursion, you know, we're going off the cruise ship to go see the waterfall. It's an excursion. It's not the best word for this. This bombing campaign is maybe a way to say it, but I mean, I don't have a problem calling it a war, even if it's undeclared. It's an undeclared war. Well, only wars can be declared. No. Anyway, it should be more popular than it is. Amen. I mean, when you listen to this show routinely, I hope, and you've heard me talk about this several times by now, and what's your take on at least my position? It's obvious. This is a no-brainer. It's just only the question of, you know, timing, practicality, cost, all of that. Those are fair questions to ask. What's our objective? What's our strategy? What's our get out eventually? You know, how much does it depend on the Iranian people to do their part after the bombing campaign ends and so forth? Those are all fair questions. But this should be more popular than it is. It's amazing that people are not just, even Democrats agree that getting rid of the regime leaders is appropriate. I mean, even Chuck Schumer, you know. So anyway, it is kind of wild that the American people, who then again don't know anything about geography or world events, be honest, you know that's true, they could barely pass the citizenship test most days, probably not real great on international affairs. You know, what's the difference between a Shia and a Sunni? Spelling? I don't know. You know, like, right? You know, so it's, on the one hand, it's not that surprising that ignorant people don't know enough to know that a war makes sense. On the other hand, it's still a little bit weird that the president hasn't made more of the case, or Rubio. And I mean, I know they've tried. Anyway, back to his comments, just because I thought it was particularly interesting to hear from a guy who's, you know, not pro-Trump, certainly, but pro this war, and thinks these are the things that the president could do. Make the case clear. Have a clear case to make. Make it repeatedly. I mean, honestly, I never thought about it. So I'm a kind of guy who sometimes I learn by talking. Sometimes I learn by a lot of different mechanisms. But that observation about the gas prices, the gas companies are actually helping Iran, I hadn't thought of that until I was talking through it just a minute ago. But the more I think about it, you know, the price of that gallon did not get affected by what's going on in Iran over the last 2 weeks, right? The gallon's price was determined a month ago, but yet they've changed it on you now. Why? Because they can. They think they can. Well, who does it benefit? Well, it benefits them. Okay, true. Who else does it benefit? It doesn't benefit us as a country. It doesn't benefit us as a military. Doesn't benefit the PR campaign in favor of this action to destroy evil. Anyway, back to the interview.
If the president does decide to call it a victory and stop, and assuming, you know, Iran has a say and Israel has a say as well, does it then become a situation where every few years the United States decides it needs to launch a campaign to hit ballistic missile sites and whatever else they have rebuilt?
Yeah, we talked about this the other day, right? If you're going to eradicate their ability to do it, that takes a lot. The farther back down the capability chain you push, down to the electrical grid and machine tools and, you know, technology and knowledge and all of that, the harder it gets to prevent. Well, there's a certain time curve based on how far down you push, down how far down you suppress their capability. And are we going to every couple of years have to go back in and bomb again because they're going to try to rebuild again?
Well, I mean, I think we always need that optionality. Listen, they were, as the Secretary of State talked about, had significantly upped their missile program, right, and their offensive missile program, and we know that, right? He said more than 100 a month. Mm-hmm. We know the interceptors are expensive and tough to make, and we don't produce as many. And that, you know, is a threat to us, to our allies, to our bases. And remember, this is the regime's death to America, right? They've killed thousands and thousands of Americans, our allies, right, and our servicemen and women, attack our bases, including those they've killed in the last week,
and right? Thousands of their own,
tens of thousands of their own people, right? So, you know, these are not good people. So, but you also need to understand what the objective is, or this thing will just continue to spread. And if he wants to declare victory, I think the president really needs to lay out what the mission is. Getting the full nuclear weapons or regime change is much different than degrading their missile capacity.
That's exactly correct.
Do you believe when the president said that they were on the verge of attacking the United States, they were on the verge of attacking Israel, and therefore the U.S. attacked first because of that?
This is a really interesting question because he's on the House Intelligence Committee, which means he knows things he can't talk about. Okay? So do you believe the president when the president says they were on the verge of attacking? This came out much after the beginning, you know, the idea that Iran was ready to do something right away, and we did. This is essentially a preemptive strike as opposed to a prophylactic strike. They're different. Preemptive means it's happening right now. Prophylactic means we're trying to prevent it happening in the future, okay? And the president has been making the case that it's, to some degree, not a big deal, but that this was preemptive. They were on the verge of doing something right away. There was sort of military exigency going on here.
I think, you know, without talking about things that I can't talk about, you know, I think certainly as was disclosed, they were massively upping their missile program. I think in the 12-day war, we significantly degraded their nuclear capabilities, but it wasn't gone to zero. So you've got nuclear challenges, you've got a massive drone program and a missile program. Those things are real, and they're not afraid to use it, as we've seen. Yeah. So that's real. Now, the question of timing and everything else and laying out the case, we'll leave that. Those are some things I can't talk about. But I believe there certainly was a threat.
I find that to be a really interesting answer because he definitely talks about their capability, rebuilding it, the unique sort of historical place we were in still fairly close proximity to last year's attack that degraded their capability, and they were rebuilding that as well. So our ability to wage an air campaign against them, the odds were going down daily as they rebuilt, in addition to them actively, aggressively building their missile capability, which is not an imminent threat, but is the kind of thing that you might take action on because every day the chances go worse. But he really very deliberately avoids the question of imminency because in order to answer that question, you'd have to say things that he's not allowed to say or he feels, which is perfectly appropriate. At the same time, you might say if he knew there were nothing imminent, he'd probably just say that. Right? If he knew there was not anything happening immediately and no exigency like the president's been talking about, you know, it's one of those things where if it goes one way, the people who are in the know feel comfortable saying it. If it goes the other way, the people in the know do not feel comfortable saying it. And since he does not feel comfortable saying it, that's a concession of sorts, right? You know, when somebody asks you about, you know, well, did you have that affair? And you say, no. Okay. And somebody asks you if you had that affair, like, well, you know, I don't want to talk about my private life. You know, could be no, and I don't want to talk about private life. But typically, if the answer is no, you say no. Anyway, just a thought. I don't want to read too much into it, but that's kind of just, I thought, like I said, I thought it was interesting hearing a Democrat who is pro the war talk about this. I appreciate one listener gave me the tip on that interview. I hadn't seen it myself personally, so thank you for that. And yeah, like so many other things we're watching, we're seeing, somebody might ask the question, well, the Strait of Hormuz is only like 20 to 25 miles wide. I mean, an aircraft carrier projects power to 150, 200 miles, you know, what's the problem? well, you know, 4 miles away from launchers and drones and everything else is different from 60 miles away from launchers and drones or 100 miles away from launchers and drones. And, you know, we don't have a, I mean, we do have a big military presence. We don't have a massive military presence. And so, you know, the ability to control a waterway that's right on the border of your adversary who does have capabilities, it's not within our power based on the numbers at this moment. Otherwise, we'd be doing it. We would be escorting the carriers, and we would be providing overwatch and insurance and all of that stuff. I'm sure it makes sense that if we could, we would, and since we're not, we can't, right? So, simple. Not, I mean, you might not think about it, but I think a lot of people kind of ask that question. It looks so small on a map. You know? Well, you know, you understand the globe is big. The map is to scale. Anyway, 524 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. If you have a home improvement project to work on, or you build things for a living or anywhere in between. Okay, if you are a contractor or you're just, you know, doing the honeydew, grumbling and swearing all the day like I do, Pensacola Hardware is your place. And not just for the stuff. I mean, obviously they have the stuff, okay? They have the best stuff. They have the right stuff. They will explain to you which stuff you bought that you don't need and which stuff you didn't buy that you do need, and they'll help you. I mean, all of that. That's the key. They have the guidance. They have the advice. They are the, you know, living, breathing, knowing institutional YouTube. You know, like, I'll look it up on YouTube. Well, why don't you look it up at Pensacola Hardware? Like, they know how to do this stuff. They have been doing it for 175 years. I mean, obviously, Jimmy and Martin and Mansfield themselves have not been, but the company has been around longer than any other company in the state of Florida, one of the 50 oldest companies in the entire country. Why? Because they know. They know. If it was built here, they probably had a hand in it. They are your commercial construction supply business. They are your just individual help. And also great housewares in the front, a great place to go buying gifts for yourself or somebody else that difficult to get for a person, especially if they're an SEC fan. They have a lot of SEC merchandise. Anyway, Pensacola Hardware, a fantastic place to solve your home improvement or home construction or, you know, commercial construction needs. The oldest business in the entire state of Florida, 175 years young, helping people build, rebuild, and remodel Pensacola since 1851, right downtown at 20 East Gregory Street.
You've probably heard all those ads for life insurance. Just a few dollars a day, apply online in minutes, no medical exam. Simple, easy, and cheap, right? Now you're thinking, maybe I should get a quote. Well, smart thinking. Everyone should have life insurance. But here's what they don't tell you. Those few dollars a day rates, they're for young people in perfect health. That's why everyone calls Big Lou the 50 to 60-year-old not-so-perfect candidate. Like you. You take prescription meds and you're overweight. Winner, winner, fried chicken dinner. Well, Big Lou works with life insurance companies that want people like you with no surprises after you apply. In fact, if you're a 50-year-old guy with a few health glitches, Lou could probably find you $1 million of term life coverage for about $200 a month. So, yeah, you need life insurance. But unless you're young and healthy, you gotta call Big Lou, because he's like you, older, heavier, and on meds, too. Get a quote right now at 800-529-2856. 800-529-2856 or biglou.com.
In the time it takes to watch one episode of your favorite show, you could be approved for your auto loan. While your dinner's in the oven, you could be comparing rates. By the time your morning coffee is brewed, those keys to your new car could practically be in your hand. PenAir Credit Union doesn't just process auto loans. We beam you straight into the driver's seat. Fast approvals, low rates, and easy financing. Apply now at penair.org/autoloans. Federally insured by NCUA.
The Hugh Hewitt Show, weekdays 2 till 4, right after Markley Van Camp and Robbins on News Radio 92.3.
Informative, local, dependable.
So, Bill, what you're telling me, essentially, is that Napoleon was a short, dead dude.
Oh, yeah.
Well, yeah, 528 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning. By the way, John, good to have you back.
Oh, it's good to be back.
You feeling alive. Healthier now?
Oh, a lot better.
All right. I know you're feeling pretty rough the last couple of days.
It was tough, dude.
Sorry to have you out. I'm so sore this morning. I was just telling you off there. I'm so sore this morning. We had kickball last night. We play in this adult kickball league at Ashton Brosnahan and on Thursday nights. Oh, it's so much fun. I love it. My wife is turning 50 in 2 weeks, and I'm 55, and all the kids are like 25, you know, 28. I mean, like the old ones are 30.
Right? The old ones are 30.
But guess who scored a in-the-park home run last night?
Your wife did.
No, oh. Me.
I was trying to get on her good side.
You know, runner on second, kick the ball to right, runner goes, I go, they throw to the pitcher, and I run to second, and they throw at me and miss me, and that goes into right field, all the way home.
Look at
oh,
you.
Yeah. Oh, I'm paying for it now, though.
Oh, I bet you are.
I mean, I'm good for 90 feet of sprinting. It might even be 60 feet. I'm not sure what the base distance is, but, 240 feet later.
Oh.
My wife, we get home, and I tell her, I'm like, I already feel I'm going to be sore tomorrow. And she says, from what? I'm like, what you mean from what? Didn't you see your superstar husband out there? You know, she did. That's just her way of making me feel, you know, whatever.
Good. Yeah.
All right. 437-1620. Hey, if you wake up in the morning feeling tired, it's not because of dodgeball. Kickball, excuse me. It might be the mattress. I mean, it might be. You're supposed to go to bed feeling tired, you know, and maybe not sore exactly, but, you know, worn out. And wake up feeling refreshed and invigorated and ready. Not supposed to go to bed feeling kind of okay and wake up feeling worse and creaky and bad. That you need a new mattress, and you probably know you do, okay? Well, the Sleep Center, they've been doing this for 30 years. They're the original here in Pensacola. Best selection, best service, best price. Everybody else is imitating them and never duplicating them. No commission for their salespeople, so if you want them to leave you alone, they will. If you want them to educate you, they will. But find the bed that makes sense to you. That depends on your body, depends on how you sleep. It depends on a lot of things. And so go there, get educated, and get a bed that will really make you feel good. The Sleep Center on the north side of Creighton, just east of Davis Highway.
This is a Fox News alert. I'm CJ Papa. U.S. Central Command confirms four of the six crew members on a refueling aircraft that went down in western Iraq are dead. Rescue efforts continue, adding the plane was not struck by either hostile or friendly fire. Iran's leader delivering a message to the world, but he was not seen on camera, so is he alive?
I think he's probably alive in some form.
President Trump speaking with Fox's Brian Kilmeade on Brian's radio show.
We are decimating them. We've knocked out most of their missiles.
You can hear the full interview with the president at 10 a.m. Eastern. The FBI investigating terror attacks. One at a synagogue in suburban Detroit. The suspect died. No one was injured. The other in Virginia. A victim was shot dead in a classroom at Old Dominion University. The suspect was subdued and killed by ROTC students. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 531 at News Radio 92.3. I'm David Wayne. Right now, 45 degrees. We've got clear skies here across the area. We'll get to our forecast. Brooke Richardson has that one for us in just a few minutes. Santa Rosa County now has the final piece needed to complete the Eglin Ribs effluent project at Navarre Beach. Edwin Henry donated the last utility easement needed. This week, Commissioner Ray Eddington says this has been quite a process.
Michael, me, Tom, we have worked on getting this little section, and it took a while. And I want to thank y'all being on board to get this done. And it's a big improvement for the beach down there and Navarre.
The county had a groundbreaking several years ago, but was waiting on this last piece. The project will get effluent out of the Sound. The county can now start running the rest of the pipe. Commissioner Kerry Smith congratulated Eddington on his work. Commissioners approved accepting the donated easement unanimously. Governor DeSantis blocking the reappointment of Escambia County Chief Deputy Andrew Hobbs to the Pensacola State College Board of Trustees. Hobbs had already been cleared in both the Senate Ethics and Elections Committee and the Higher Education Committee, and he was on his way to a full floor confirmation vote. In a statement, Hobbs said he's disappointed by the governor's decision after successfully clearing both committees, but also said he stands firmly by every vote and decision he made while serving. He was originally appointed to the board in February of last year. Well, the bodies of a Theodore mother and her two children have been found buried in a wooded area in Summerdale, Baldwin County. Authorities identified the victims as 40-year-old Aurelia Chalk, her 17-year-old daughter, Nierka, and her 2-year-old son, Anthony. All three were killed with an edged weapon wrapped in plastic and bedding and buried together. Hector Argueta Guerra, initially charged with kidnapping the family, now faces multiple counts of capital murder. Prosecutors say they plan to seek the death penalty. Mobile County Sheriff Paul Birch says Argueta Guerra is a suspect, a suspected Chernos gang member who'd been originally deported but was released in 2021. The family was last seen alive on January 30th. Pensacola police say they'll adapt if a recent court ruling on red light cameras leads to changes in state law. Sergeant Brittany Sturgeon says they have 13 red light cameras in the city.
If having these cameras is unconstitutional, we'll adjust and obviously not utilize that. So, again, it's not new. This happens all the time. The same with laws regarding, maybe marijuana or firearms, they change all the time, and we adjust to the legislature, and this will be no different.
A Broward County judge ruled that holding registered owners responsible for violations could be unconstitutional. The ruling is expected to be appealed. Well, there could be a new higher education option coming to Santa Rosa County.
Faith-based college wants to build a new university campus north of Pace, and now the landowner has requested Santa Rosa County for a zoning change to make that project possible. John Melvin Christian College hopes to buy 58 acres along Shamukla Highway. Administrators project the school could reach 1,000 students in 5 years and add up to $18 million a year to the local economy. Chris Bryan, News Radio, 92.3.
Thank you very much, Brooke, or thank you very much, Chris. We're going to get our weather forecast with Brooke Richardson. That's right now here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable.
Starting off cool today with temperatures this afternoon near 67 degrees, mostly sunny skies. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 53 degrees. For Saturday, sunny skies, high near 72. Saturday night, temperatures dropping near 62 degrees. Going into Sunday, partly cloudy skies, 10% chance of a stray sprinkle, otherwise mostly sunny, high near 77. And Sunday night, temperatures dropping near 52. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Morning Weather Center.
There we go. Thank you very much, Brooke. 43 degrees right now. Clear skies. Our next news in 30 minutes. We've got breaking news anytime it happens. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
I'm Dom Savino with Your Money Now. BuzzFeed says it has substantial doubt about its ability to continue as a business. The digital media company that took the mid-2010s by storm has since fallen into tens of millions of dollars in debt. The decline in BuzzFeed's digital traffic has played out since it went public 5 years ago. The Senate has passed the largest housing affordability bill in 30 years. The bill includes a ban on investors buying single-family homes. The vote was 89-10, but the bill could have a tougher path than the House of Representatives. Part of the measure is designed to cut back on the number of companies owning high numbers of properties to help with affordability. On Wall Street, stock futures and oil prices are both a little changed. For the moment, investors turn their focus from the U.S.-Iran war to key inflation data coming this morning. The international oil benchmark is hovering at $100 a barrel after closing above that mark yesterday for the first time since 2022. That's Your Money Now.
Oh no, my drain is clogged.
Drain All is your one-stop shop for all your drain cleaning needs in the Pensacola area.
It's not going down.
From stubborn clogs to serious sewer line issues, they've got you covered. They offer camera inspections to find the problem fast, sewer line cleaning to keep everything flowing, powerful hydro jetting services, and routine maintenance to prevent costly backups before they happen. Trustworthy, dependable, honest. Don't wait for a disaster. Call Drain All today.
What's their number?
850-977-3215 and get your drains flowing again.
Thanks.
Christy and Darren Costello are the owners of Costello's Butcher Shop, Deli, Fine Wines, and Cheeses. On March 15th, 2020, at the start of the COVID pandemic, Christy Costello woke in the middle of the night by a vision she was given from God.
I felt I was being called to feed the children that were missing out on meals because the schools had been closed, Jesus told me.
And then it all began.
That next morning, I started our free lunch program, feeding every child a free sack lunch that came through our doors.
At first, there were a few. Then every day, more and more came.
The need in our community was huge. The demand kept growing, and I refused to turn away from feeding these children.
Fast forward.
I created a foundation in honor of my mother, Kimberly Tower. To date, we have provided over 500,000 free meals. We've made tangible strides, but our mission is calling for even more, and we really need your help. We need donations, we need volunteers, and most of all, we need your prayers.
To find out more on how you can help, visit the Kimberly Tower Foundation website at ktfforlove.org or drop by and meet Christy at Costello's Butcher Shop and Deli on the corner of Lillian and Fairfield Drive.
Here's what's happening around Pensacola this week. Friday and Saturday, don't miss Kites on the Coast, presented by the Council on Aging at Casino Beach Boardwalk. Enjoy the kites, food trucks, and show-stopping demonstrations. See visitpensacola.com. Saturday, it's the 11th annual Beach Run for America's Warriors at the Floribama. 100% of the proceeds benefit Special Ops Warrior Foundation. See floribama.com. Submit your events at newsradio923.com.
Ever notice how the best advice usually comes from someone who actually does this stuff for a living? That's the idea behind Pet Talk, also known as the Pensacola Expert Panel, weekdays at 9.
Good morning, this is Pet Talk, Pensacola's expert panel with Meg.
Meg sits down with local business owners and professionals to talk real solutions, real experience, and real life questions. Pet Talk with Meg,
weekdays 9 to 11
on News Radio 92.3, 95.3, AM 1620, informative, local, dependable.
Good morning. I'm Andrew McKay. It's the Pensacola Morning News. Joining us right now, we have our senator from the great state of Florida, Rick Scott, former governor, of course, also a Navy veteran that may become relevant in the course of this conversation. Senator, welcome back to the show, sir.
It's always great to be with you. So I bet the weather is better.
I'll take ours over yours for sure, 100%. Obviously, we're going to talk about the Iran war and the Save America Act, but I did want to start with two somewhat smaller things only because I want to make sure we get them in, and I know my habit is they won't get in if I don't make them happen at the beginning. The first one is daylight saving time. Ever since the legislature passed this to go to universal daylight time and not go back to standard time in the winter, we've never had a supporter in the House. You and Ashley Moody and before her Marco Rubio were on board with this. I think Jimmy Patronis is also on board with this. Are we actually going to get this as a bill that states that want to go to universal daylight time will be able to do it?
I'm hopeful. The thing that's going to help us is as states do what Florida did to say they want to go to daylight saving time when the federal law changes. So I think I'm going to keep pushing it. I do it every year. I know Ashley Moody is going to be a good partner on this. Jimmy Patronis says, the hard thing is, I think if I could get a vote, it would pass. So far it's been able to be blocked. As more and more states do this and they're doing it every day, it's going to make it hard for people up here to block it.
It makes sense. If you get enough, build a coalition based on the states that have taken the kind of, action that Florida has done. The other thing I wanted to make sure we got in is the Service Academy nominations. They are open now. So if people want to go to the Navy Academy or the Air Force Academy, this is the time for them to apply to your office, right?
Yep. Go to rickscott.senate.gov. Then you hit nominations and you apply. We probably have more applicants in our state than any state in the country. We'll have 800 applicants. I get to nominate 15 people for each of the academies. It is a life changer. The other thing is when you interview these individuals, these young men and women, you feel really good about the future of your country. But anybody that wants any high school senior or anybody, even if you want to start over again, if you're in college, we'd love to get your nomination because we want the best. We want the reason our kids typically get in is because we have so many people apply. So we have outstanding individuals. Some House and Senate members don't put the effort into it that we do. And so by doing that, we get really good people.
Oh, that's an interesting point, given the size of the state and the number of applications, you can vet them more heavily and have more qualified. That makes sense. It's a numbers game. Let's talk a little bit about the Save America Act. It's so fascinating because as somebody who thinks that having an ID to prove that you're a citizen to vote seems like a real no-brainer compared to the things that we require people to have IDs for that are completely nowhere near that level of importance. But, of course, the other side has been saying that somehow married women with married names won't be able to figure this out or that, poor people won't be able to have IDs.
Lie.
And I've said, hey, I'll do this. Let's make an ID free. We do a lot of free IDs in Florida. I don't mind giving everybody a free ID, and let's just make sure that they're citizens before they vote.
Yeah. People have IDs. I mean, this is just the Democrats, you know, want fraud. I've been up here 7 years, and this is the most popular thing other than maybe daylight savings time. There's nowhere I go in Florida, but the first thing people say is, how are we going to get the Save America Act passed? So we're working on it every day. So here's our pass. It's a simple bill. You have to have an ID to vote. That's pretty simple. You have to have an ID for almost everything else in life. And then you have to show your American citizen to register to vote. Pretty basic. So it's over like 83% of Americans want it. Republicans, Democrats, Independent, it's really popular. So here's our choices. One, we got to get 60 votes. That'd be the easiest way. So I tell our people, call every Republican and Democrat in the Senate and tell them how important this is to you. Let people know how important it is. That's number one. Number two, maybe we can attach it to a must-pass bill like defense supplemental. Maybe it was Homeland Security funding it's not being funded. Maybe it's FISA reauthorization, something like that. Number three is to do the talking filibuster, which the last time this was really used was the Civil Rights Act. But it's a possibility. We don't have enough votes yet in the Senate to do that. So we're continuing to have meetings to explain to people how it would work. But, this is the most important thing we can pass. If we can't secure elections, then the rest of it doesn't matter.
Yeah, it seems like a very simple thing. And the arguments on the other side, even though I try to take them seriously, I find them, incredibly lacking. So I hope so. And, we've seen John Thune say that he, might be willing to, change his mind on the filibuster for this particular one. Even the president's threatening that he won't sign any bills until this one gets signed. He's doing what you said, attach it to a must-pass bill. If you want me to sign something, pass this, I'll sign this, and then we can talk about other stuff. Huge ongoing news right now is Iran. I have said we were completely justified in doing this. We would have been justified in doing this any time in the history of the current regime in Iran. They are a threat to us, to their neighbors, to the region, nuclear ambitions, all of that. I'm completely on board with the justification for the war and our way of doing it. My concerns have to do with, and what next, and when next? We're what, 14 days into a 60-day war powers. Do you expect there to be a vote on authorization for the use of force in AUMF for this action? Because if we get to the end of the 60 days, I mean, that's it, right?
No. Every president has been clear. They have the right to use military force without a form of declaration of war. So now the only thing that Congress actually can do is decide if they don't want to fund it. So at the time if Congress decides they don't want to fund what the president's doing, that's the only way. The president has the right to do this. This is every president since Truman has said he has a right. So no, we do not have to have a authorization of force. The president's right to do this, by the way, he had to do it because of where we are. Obama and Biden appeased. Obama gave him cash. They had the uranium to get to a nuclear weapon. So it was a matter of time before we've been attacked on our homeland. On top of that, they were building 100 ballistic missiles a month. And at some point, they were going to overwhelm our troops and our ally Israel. So Trump is doing the right thing. And our military, thank God for our military, they've done a great job. But, fixing the Strait of Hormuz, getting rid of the mines is going to be hard. That means we're going to have higher gas prices during this conflict. But after that, if the right thing happens, that we get a new regime, and with the oil coming from Venezuela, we'll actually see much lower gas prices. Your heart goes out to the families that lost their loved ones, including Cody Cork in Florida, and the 140 plus people that have been injured. It sounds like all those are minor, but I hope they have a full recovery. But we need to pray for our military, people are willing to put on the uniform and defend our freedom. So I think this is going to be, it's going to take longer than we think, but we're not going to, Trump doesn't want a forever war. We're not going to have a forever war, but, we're going to have to continue to, we're going to continue to see a barrage of drone attacks. As Ukraine has proven, you probably don't win a war with drones, but you can sure cause a lot of damage.
Yeah.
So we're going to have to deal with that. But Trump did the right thing. We need to support him.
You know, the couple of questions that I have, especially after the most recent press conference that General Kane did with Secretary of War Pete Hegseth, he said that the goal of the war is to eradicate their ability to use, to get rid of their drone and missile capability. Check, I'm on board with that. To destroy their Navy, because that's also projection of power, abuse of their authority, and, harming shipping. Check, I'm on board with that. But then he said the goal is to make it impossible for them to rebuild or reconstitute the Navy, the drones, and the missile capability. And that, to me, sounds an awful lot like the Morgenthau Doctrine, from World War II, like make Germany a farming community, basically take away their industrial capacity. That is a huge objective. I don't disagree with the importance of it, because if they're going to continually use machine tools and supply chains and energy and metallurgy and technology to to rebuild the factory, basically. But that is, I don't know how you do that with just air power or how you do that for the long term. So what's your theory about how we accomplish something that makes it so they can't keep rebuilding drones and missiles in the future?
Well, I think they do plan on just absolutely destroying their ability through destroying their industrial base. I think they're just going to continue to use the gravity bombs and just keep destroying every capacity they have. And then I know Israel wants regime change, and I think Israel is going to continue down the path of destroying their leadership. I haven't seen a classified briefing on this, but there's reports that the new Ayatollah is already injured, but we'll see if that's true or not. You hate death, but this guy his father has been part of killing so many Americans. They've been killing us for decades.
No, totally agree. Yeah.
So they've
been at war with us for 47 years, and we're finally participating. I completely agree. The question is, do you think the people are capable of forming the sort of, democratic republic, a place that would have individual rights? I know there are people who want to rise up, but when a regime has been that controlled for that long, it's like expecting Cuba to stage a revolution. And they don't have guns. They don't have power. They don't have, for goodness sakes, they don't have the internet for the last 5 days or whatever. Is it realistic to think that the mullahs and the Ayatollah will give up power, that it can be taken from them?
Well, I think that first off, people want freedom. Everywhere in the world, people want freedom. Now, is it hard when they've been pushed down like this and they have no weapons? It has. But, the Iranian military has to kill their own brothers and sisters to keep their power. So that's awfully difficult to do long term. So I'm optimistic. I know that the Kurds have an interest, because they've been destroyed by the Ayatollah. So we'll see. I don't think any of this is easy.
Yeah.
But I think it's necessary.
Last thing that I wanted to talk with you about is just a little bit, not on this subject exactly, but I know your background. You were in the Navy. You and I were talking before, and I didn't realize what you had done. You worked on radar, back in the day. But I thought you'd find it interesting, given both your age and your Navy connection, the Nimitz is on its last deployment. It's just left Washington the last couple of days. It's going to be deploying to Southcoms, going around South America, and then decommissioning. It'll be 50 years in service, and it seems like a pretty significant end of an era. Any thoughts on that?
It is. The Nimitz, I remember when it started. It was the flash ship. Its abilities were unsurpassed. And so, it's interesting. I'm on armed services, and it's interesting. The world has changed a lot. The way war is going to be fought is changing a lot. The Ukrainians have shown us that that drone technology and drone defense is going to be really important going forward.
Yeah.
And we're going to have to be very cautious about our ability to defend large infrastructure like an aircraft carrier.
Yeah, agreed. And in fact, some of the sort of dispersal of power, sort of destroyer swarms instead of a carrier, the move towards unmanned and even, autonomous aviation.
Yeah.
We're seeing that in the Navy. I've read some really interesting stuff about the future of the carrier for precisely that reason. And, we're now kind of we're thinking differently about this, right? With, you know, Iran building drone carriers and even threatening a California attack with some kind of, you know, a drone ship or a drone boat or something like that. It absolutely, the high vulnerability of a centralized, you know, mobile airstrip like an aircraft carrier makes you think about the future of what makes sense for the Navy. And you're unarmed, sir. You see this stuff all the time, right?
Yeah, and I met with the Chief of Naval Operations yesterday, and we're just, and one of the things we talked about was the fact that, I mean, the next, you know, the war, and even we're learning with this one, that, you know, we've got to focus on things that we're going to be able to take out drones without expensive missile defense systems.
Right.
So, because it's so cheap to build something. And they can swarm you. So there's a good book called I've read a few years ago called The Kill Chain. And this is, it's this idea that, you know, through this drone technology, they can swarm some of our best defenses. And so we've got to be prepared for that.
Yeah. Your C-Wiz can do a lot, but it can't do everything. There are limits for sure. Rick Scott, he is our senator from the great state of Florida. Senator, as always, thank you so much for the time. Thanks for the service. I hope you get back to Florida real soon and can enjoy the warm weather instead of being stuck in D.C., although we're supposed to get cold weather on Monday. So be careful what you wish for. Senator, thank you for the time. I appreciate it.
Hey, Andrew. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
And when I said that, I obviously wasn't paying very close attention because it's like 40 this morning. The cold got here early. Oh, man. Well, hey, you know, it's not all the time. We'll take it that way. Hey, if you need a new roof on your home or you're not sure if you do, you think you need a repair or you know you need a repair and you're not sure whether that needs a whole roof or not, well, that call Quality Roofing Solutions. This is what they do for folks all the time. Now, about 90% of what they do is full roof replacement. And, you know, they'll tell you, look, this is what it will cost to repair. This is what's going to happen if you repair now and you have to replace in 3 or 4 years, because often that's the case. What will that cost be then? It'll be higher. How can you save money on your insurance? Not everybody, but some people for a wind mitigation inspection report can be significant. You know, somebody's got a 14-year-old roof and they replace it and they do a wind mitigation inspection. One case, somebody was paying $4,800 a year in insurance, went down to $2,200 a year. $2,600 a year improvement in their home insurance because of just having a roof. That pays off the roof pretty quick, right? They are a 4.9 rated on Google. They've done 10,000 roofs in the area. They're highly invested in local community, especially youth sports, but also Art Gateway, and they do some Dave Ramsey stuff in Santa Rosa County with the schools, or at least they did. You know, just they love doing that kind of stuff. They treat you like you're a person. Okay, they'll answer your phone call. They'll get back to you. They do all kinds of things to improve quality and pricing, and I want to get into the details. You can ask them about that. But also, they warranty the roof for lifetime workmanship on a roof, which is absolutely unheard of. Give them a call today or schedule an appointment or just go by to see what they do. You can do that too. QualityRoofingSolutions.com, 777-0961.
It's the Always Sunny Show. When you're ready to throw a barbecue, it's Always Sunny's. Join us today at 9:30 with me, Eldon Scott, to hear about barbecue events in the Pensacola community, win some amazing prizes, and hear from community leaders and how Sunny's Barbecue has built a strong Pensacola for 40 years. Pep Talk with Eldon Scott, spreading the spirit of barbecue far and wide. Remember to tell Sunny that Eldon sent you.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
When I heard I needed a heart transplant, I thought it was game over. All I could think about was the memories that I wouldn't be able to make with my family.
Then an angel entered our lives as an organ donor. Their decision to register as a donor saved my husband's life.
Save lives, say yes. Register today as a donor at DonateLifeFlorida.org.
This message is sponsored by Donate Life Florida and the Florida Association of Broadcasters.
Hi, this is Todd Thompson, President and CEO of the Greater Pensacola Chamber of Commerce. Tune in to the Pensacola Expert Panel for the Chamber Connection Show that will keep you informed on what's going on with your Chamber of Commerce. Tune in this Monday morning at 10 to find out about our upcoming events, all of our different programs, and what's happening with our local business community. It's the Chamber Connection Show every other Monday at 10 on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
This isn't shouting.
It's conversation.
Hugh Hewitt, weekdays at 2 on News Radio 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620.
Hey, want to hear the most annoying sound in the world?
Guys!
5:58 here on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. Could be a Christian university coming to Chamukla? Okay. All right.
What?
Yeah, the PNJ had a good article about this. Tom had a good article about this yesterday, that there's this, I guess it's an entity that, Wealthy Financier has already done one that did fairly well in, I think, New Orleans, and then they tried to expand to Texas, and it completely failed, and there was controversy over it. They've got one already kind of half expanded here in Florida, and they're thinking about north of Pace, building a Christian school, college, starting kind of with athletics, and then building from there. They say they can grow it to be, 1,000 kids in 5 years, and we could have another private, thriving Christian university in our area. Maybe. We've got to make zoning and all that happen, but I don't know. Kind of thought it was a fascinating thing. Oh, and the Florida House has now voted to put highway speeds up to 80 miles an hour on the interstate.
Woo-hoo.
I mean, it's about time. That still is about 10 miles an hour too slow for most people, but that would get closer to representing what people actually do in Florida.